Wackety schmackety do. That was the start of the show.
That was the start?
From the shores of the Colorado River on the beautiful Parker Strip, you're listening to the Parker Livecast.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Parker Livecast. Josh Savino with me in studio. How are you, Josh?
Howdy. Hey, how are you?
Thank you for that. Very Truman Show introduction there. And Mary Hamilton live via Skype. How are you, Miss Mary?
Howdy. Hey, how are you?
Yeah, this is very... I love it.
Truman.
We're expecting a call any moment from Casey Folks, director of Best in the Desert Racing Association, which, of course, has been coming to Parker for a long time. Oh, I just thought of another question I want to ask Casey. Let me write it down.
Oh, yeah, write it down.
I'm always, I have so many things I want to ask Casey. I find it a very interesting thing that this is the guy behind the Parker 425 and behind the Parker 250, the Blue Water Challenge, the Vegas Torino, for God's sakes.
Some may say his name is synonymous with off-road racing.
Some may say that. In fact, I think someone might
have. And the Mint 400.
And the Mint 400. That's right. Big race over there in Nevada, right?
Best in the Desert is a wonderful series of off-road racing. And being in Parker, we get to see two of the races on schedule.
I forgot the question I was going
to
ask.
We get to see the Parker 425, which is coming up here the following weekend. Mm-hmm. And we also get to see the Blue Water Desert Challenge, which is in October.
Yes.
So we get two of the select races on this circuit, which is just great time. Mary, have you ever been to the Mint 400?
I have not, but I do understand that the Parker 425 has the best spectator areas in all of off-road racing.
That makes sense to me. It's a really, really good spectator race.
Right. And our race is the last street start off-road race in the country.
Is that right? So no other off-road race starts on the street like in Parker. Well, you know what? If you're going to do it anywhere, do it in Parker, Arizona,
exactly.
Right? This is a racing
That's
town,
right.
Man. Next week, what we're going to have is the Downtown Experience starting Thursday, right?
Yes, the Downtown Experience. We're in our sixth year. We're in our third year of the Pit Crew Challenge.
Right.
So the Downtown Experience is an opportunity for everybody to come downtown and listen to some great music from Highway 95, maybe grab a beverage from the Sir Optimus River Diva Bar. We have a lot of our nonprofits out of the area that are going to be vending food. Everybody who's participating in the time trials on Thursday morning will come to the Downtown Experience. And then we start the Pit Crew Challenge at 5:30 p.m.
Excellent. All right, Mary. Hey, Casey, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how's
Casey,
it going, man?
Best in the desert. I am doing awesome. How are you guys doing?
We're doing really,
just
really
great,
well.
Casey.
Thanks for joining us here. You know, last week, Casey, Josh and I were saying it must be pretty cool to be Casey Folks, the guy at the center of this huge race and many others every year with all these big names in the sport in your orbit. But I bet most people don't know the really unglamorous side, so to speak, the amount of work that goes in, right?
Yeah, you know, it's like anything. Sometimes it all looks good on the outside. And then you
right.
Inside of you go, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
Well, first I would like to thank you for inviting me on the show, too. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're so welcome. Do you have an office and stuff?
Yes, I'm in my office right now in Las Vegas. Best in the Desert is headquartered here in Las Vegas.
Are you in there much? Are you in the office much?
Yes, quite a bit until, of course, there's an event, and then I move on to that event. As an example, in Parker, when we go down there, we'll be there for about 8-9 days in Parker. And then we go out in the field a lot to work on the events, different events, do logistics, GPSing, or whatever it might be.
Right.
But most of the time, I'm here in my office.
And so there's no real typical day, in a sense, for you, because you're running around. Either you're organizing from your office, or you're maybe out here in Parker or somewhere else where you need to be to organize a race, get ready for it?
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, this job is a 7-day, 24-hour day job. There's just hardly any time that I'm not working on, thinking about, making notes, whatever it might be in regards to Best in the Desert and these events. Best in the Desert is like a juggernaut, and if you don't keep control of it, it can get out of control real quick.
Yeah.
So it's something you got to stay right on top of all the time.
Wow. How did you get into desert racing in the first place?
It's funny. We're having a staff meeting next door. I left the staff meeting to come over, and a guy just asked me in the meeting, a medical representative. He goes, how'd you come up with the name Best in the Desert anyway? So I told him that story.
Uh-huh.
My background, my expertise was motorcycles. In fact, I still have a motorcycle shop here in Las Vegas where we sell off-road bikes. So my expertise since I was a little kid and has always been riding motorcycles, racing motorcycles, and, of course, going into the motorcycle business. So it's probably like you guys, you find your niche in life that you're good at. I'm good at logistics and putting on events. That's what my expertise is in
that
area.
And did you find that out pretty early on?
Yeah, I think so. I would say in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
I formed a motorcycle club here, an off-road club called the Ground Shakers, and then I started a racing organization in Nevada called Motorcycle Racing Association of Nevada, and I developed from that, and just my skills got better and better and better, and then I thought, you know, I got lucky. I went to work as an event coordinator for an Italian company called Acerbis, so they sent me to Peru, to Morocco,
wow,
to Tunisia, and developed a lot of skills at long-distance off-road events and then put events on here in the United States for them for 3 years.
Okay. That begins to make a little sense of how you landed here. Yeah, that's very interesting. And you said the word logistics. I mean, more than anything else, that's the skill you need to be KC Folks, right?
That's, that's what I'm good at, I think, and putting things together. And, you know, in the world we live in, just like you go into a store somewhere, you want to be treated right, you're going to spend your money, and we try to go above and beyond all of our competition when it comes to the competitors that race with us, the people that race with us. We make sure that everybody's treated fair and treated professionally, honest, and we run Best in the Desert with a lot of transparency so people can see and understand what we're doing out there. And I think it's we're right there at the top. You know, I don't want to blow my horn too much and tell you we're number one, but we're definitely banging bars with the guys there that thinks that they're number one.
Right. Well, you're number one to me, KC Folks.
I'll tell you what,
because Parker absolutely loves the Best of the Desert series, and you know, Parker's been a locale for off-road racing since it became a sport.
I mean,
it's a perfect setting for that, and I'm just very glad that we have such a wonderful product with Best in the Desert that comes here not once but twice a year.
And Mary, you were saying you think KC's number one, right?
Oh, I do. I know it for a fact, too, because KC gets permits for years-long periods, and I watch him every year at the start of that race, and he leans in to each vehicle, shakes their hands, and I can read his lips going, good luck. And that is this man is a gentleman. I can't do enough for him when he's here.
Do you remember being at your first off-road race, Casey, and seeing it all happen for the first time? Why do you think people get hooked on it like you got hooked on it?
Oh, I think it's a passion. The people that race, and by the way, Mary, thank you very much for the nice words. I appreciate that. It's a passion, and the people, if you went through and interviewed everybody that's racing and said, what do you do for a living? You'll find that every walk of life is there. I just met a guy the other day, and I asked him, what do you do for a living, Kevin? And he builds hospitals all over the country, and then he staffs them.
Mm.
And I said, just like me, how did you get into that? I found I was good at something like that, and blah, blah, blah. So there's just every walk of life is involved with off-road racing, and it's a passion. There's no question about it. I mean, you think about it, these trucks now are about $600,000. They get about 1 mile to the gallon. The fuel costs $9 a gallon for them.
Yeah.
And they're out there just going for it. You know, they love it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's literally, though, you take that cost and the people think it's worth it. You know what I mean? That's the big thing.
Yes. People work hard all day long, and they want to go and enjoy themselves and have a good time at what they're doing. I want to go back, if you don't mind, and hit on Parker, Arizona for just a few words. I do a lot of interviews, and people ask me about Parker and off-road racing. I will call Parker, Arizona, probably the off-road racing headquarters in the United States. If you took a big boiling pot and put all the ingredients in to make a great off-road race, Parker has it. That is the headquarters. If you take the land, the BLM, the Crit Indians, mm-hmm. the people that live in Parker, the enthusiasm there is incredible, and it turns out it is a legend. You know, the theme of the race is the legend lives on, and mm-hmm. Parker is one of the oldest off-road races in the United States that is still going. And a lot of it, you know, I'd like to take a lot of the credit for it, but a lot of it has to do with the people, just like Mary, yourselves, the Crit Indians, the Bureau of Land Management has really comes forward to help me with this event. The La Paz County is incredible. The people that work there are just incredible. Town of Parker, the mayor, there's so many people involved with us being successful in Parker that I'd have to take 15 minutes of your show to thank them all. So
right.
Once again, you guys are the off-road racing headquarters in the United States.
Yeah, you know, you see that in Parker, how the passion is there. This is a racing town, man, and you guys are really doubling down on Parker. You know, you added the Blue Water Challenge and now back a bunch of times throughout the course of the year. So obviously that's true. Mary?
I just wanted to thank Casey for bringing three wonderful races to our area. You know, this is our big time of the year where we have all of our winter visitors, all of our second homeowners, the people that come here in the summertime that use the river are here for the desert as well. And what a great event that we have now.
You know, I think so too, Mary. I know that special events are growing, just like the Pips Crew Challenge there. That's going to grow into something big. I've talked to a couple of the people that are sponsoring that, and they have some great ideas, and mm-hmm. they want to take it to another level. We have 100 entries in the time trials.
Wow. You know,
that's more entries than a lot of people get in their races. We have, just in the time trials, we have, I think it's just over 100 entries, something like 105.
Wow.
A lot of firepower out there on that course.
Speaking of the entries, real quick, Casey, you mentioned the gas price. I remember when the gas hit, you know, $4 for regular unleaded, and people sort of started to wonder if desert racing would be affected, you know, if it would start to decline, because it's a very fuel-thirsty sport, of course, and it didn't. So, I mean, do you think it matters that we're now filling up at $1.70 a gallon for regular in places? Does that affect the number of entries or anything like that?
No. I don't think so.
Not one way or the other.
Ago, when I referred to $8.50 or $9 a gallon, that's for race fuel, by the way.
Right.
Special fuel for those vehicles. No, we noticed during, we'll call it the recession, the slowdown, the 3 or 4 years there, our entries really never wavered.
Wow.
They did a little bit in the motorcycle community, but the car and truck community, it's a deep pocket sport. You know, it costs a lot of money to do it, and apparently the people that do it, they had enough money to continue. And like we talked earlier, when you have that kind of money tied up in a race vehicle, you want to use it. And that's their relief, is to go out and drive those vehicles. So, no, I don't see any difference in the $1.70 or $1.80 a gallon. Probably does have an effect. But our entries right now, by the way, for the Parker 425 are 220 entries.
Wow. 220.
Wow.
Now, Casey, how high could you go on an entry level? Because I know that they go off in classes and they get their spots during the time trial. So how many vehicles could we feasibly have out there on that racetrack in that given period of time? Is it's not nearly 300, right?
No, we couldn't, to be honest with you. Starting the race and the logistics of the race, we couldn't get 300 entries off the line before the leader gets back around. So we have it calculated. We can handle up to about 250 entries at the Parker 425, and after that, we've got a problem, because that overall leader is going to be coming back to the finish line, and we've got to get all these people off the line before he gets there, not the finish line, but the main pit. So
right.
We monitor it constantly in the office here. We're constantly doing the figures to make sure that we're going to get everybody off the line. We're just discussing that next door. Are we going to be able to get everybody off the line?
And it does sound like you're close to that, right?
Pardon me, sir?
I'm sorry, Casey. It does sound like you're close to that. You said like 250. It sounds like you're going to be, you know, within the ballpark?
We think we will. We, you know, if, rolling, I have people all the time go, how many entries are you going to get? And if I knew that exact number, I would be downtown in Las Vegas running the roulette wheel on red or green. So those are magical numbers. We don't know. We can only estimate and look at what we did last year. And all of our races in 2014 had bigger turnouts than they did in 2013. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you our Parker 250 that we just had there in January had a bigger entry in 2015 than it did in 2014. So we're off to a good start, and anything above 225 entries for me is plenty. That's plenty of things for us to worry about and keep track about.
There. So many things. And I remember reading an article not that long ago, Casey, where it talked about, it used the word Herculean to describe what it takes to pull off a race like this, one of these big races like the Vegas to Reno or the 425 here in Parker. And it made mention of the fact that, you know, much, much, much younger guys than Casey, this article said, would have a hell of a time trying to make this work. And yet Casey pulls it off. Is it, I mean, you make it look easy. Is it easy or is it crazy?
Well, I refer to that, what you just asked. There was a commercial in Las Vegas. It was a cleaning business. It was called Al Phillips. And he would advertise on TV and he'd say, I can clean your suit for $4.95. And another guy would say, hey, Al, how can you do that? And his answer was, it's simple when you know your business.
So right,
I can
right.
maybe make it look simple because I know what I'm doing. Like I said, I have my niche in life. I'm good at it. I've got a lot of experience at it, and I've got a lot of good people around me. Sometimes it makes me look like Superman, but I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things that you work at, and you want to perfect it. I want to be the best. That's why I chose the name Best in the Desert. I wanted to be the best at what I was doing, and we're working that way. We're like everybody. We make mistakes, and we try to rectify those, look at it, and say, okay, we got to do it better.
You mentioned earlier you wanted to be number one, and you know, say you want to be the best. Does that drive to be the best, does that come from competitiveness in you, do you think?
I think so. My racing career, once again, not trying to blow my own horn, but I won 16 number one number plates, that's 16 championships. And so it was always a goal to when I raced was to try to be the best.
Yeah.
Was I? No. But that was my goal, and the same with promoting the events,
yeah,
try
yeah.
to be the best. And, you know, once again, we try desperately to treat everybody with respect. There's nobody in this organization to me that's any better than the next guy. We have a slogan, it doesn't matter how much money you have, who your sponsor is, or what your name is, you're all treated equally. In Best in the Desert. Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it's all about. It does allow you to understand a guy like Robbie Gordon, for example, when, you know, a couple of years ago he's disqualified because of a radio issue or whatever it was, and you can understand how he might feel about that. You want to be number one. He wants to be number one, right?
Well, yeah, and by the way, he was penalized. It was a penalty and not a disqualification.
Oh, right, yes.
It was enough to cost him the overall win. And mm-hmm. I love Robbie to death. He's I respect him. He's a great driver. He's probably could very easily be the best at off-road racing. We're like everybody. Sometimes people try to stretch the rules and try to do this. But if you don't treat them equally, then you lose respect from the rest of the racers to go, you know, we try to create a level playing field out there for everyone.
Yes.
So Robbie has entered in this race. He's coming
great.
Back, and he'd love to win the Parker 425 overall. I think in his life, Parker plays a special part, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a son that races in this race, but he follows the rules just like everybody else does.
No special
favors.
If you don't
have that, you lose the respect of the rest of the people that are out there.
Now, speaking of Robbie Gordon, obviously he has this financial backing, high sponsorships, major sponsors. His equipment is top of the line, and nothing puts that into more perspective than going on YouTube and typing in 1989 Parker 400. And when you look at the vehicles that were around when it was the Parker 400 back in 1989 compared to what it is in 2015, wow, you want to talk about a difference. Everything from suspension to operation to the speed to the everything, equipment in general, this sport has come so far, and it's and I can only imagine where it's going with technology, Casey.
Well, and I will say this with Best in the Desert. I've tried to be the leader in the technology inside of our sport when it comes to moving and advancing with technology. We're the ones that introduced the Class 1000. It was completely dying. You know, some people call them Class 10s. They were completely dying class, nobody building new ones. We have 50 entries in Class 1000 in Parker because we changed the rules and we allowed the water-cooled engines to be a part of it and get away from those air-cooled engines. We have a new class called the 6100 class. It's huge. I think we have 26, 27, or 28 entries in Parker coming up.
Is that the trick light?
Truck. Well, it's an unlimited truck with a spec engine. Oh, so you can have any kind of a truck you want, but it's got to have this certain engine. You can only buy three engines and put in it. Puts it back on a level playing field.
Wow.
So we're introducing new technology constantly. You know, one of our partners in this sport is Ford Racing. Ford's been with Best in the Desert since 1999. So they are introducing new engines all the time, new technology, and it bleeds over into Best in the Desert and what we're doing here. They'll approach us and say, hey, we got a brand new EcoBoost engine. Can you help us with a class? We would like to develop this, and we do that. We work hand in hand with them.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
But been a good good partnership and a good relationship between Ford and Best in the Desert.
Are there any big trends that you see pushing the future? You know, I've heard of a few off-roaders with, maybe not in races yet, I'm not sure, with electric powertrains and things like that. I'm not sure if they're fast enough to compete with the big boys yet. Anything else that people weren't doing 5 years ago that's changing the sport now and will in the future?
Turbocharge. We have now four classes that are turbocharged engines.
Oh.
Electric will never work here because the distance, you can't go far enough with it. They're fast.
Oh, the range,
but they
yeah.
They don't go long enough. You know, a real good one off-road is going to maybe get you 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that isn't going to get you to midway. So you're going to have a problem there. But the turbocharged engines, we have a guy in this race that can win this race overall with a twin turbocharged 1,000 horsepower engine. Oh, and that thing moves. And it's truck. He's an unlimited budget. Just like Robbie Gordon, he's got the trickiest things out there. And this twin turbo, this fellow's won two time trials in a row. He's going to definitely be competitive.
That'll be hard to beat.
Yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
He'll be competitive. If you ask me, who do you think's going to win Parker? I wouldn't even start to answer that. There is probably legitimately 20 people, 20 teams that can win that race overall.
Wow.
They're all on a level playing field when it comes to the high-dollar vehicles, the best teams, the big supports. Any one of those 20 people can win that.
Well, and honestly, that's what's best for the sport. When you have one person that is overwhelmingly to the favorite because of his equipment, that's no fun to watch. When you have 20.
Yeah, right.
Now, that's competitive. That's something that, as a fan of the sport, I like to see.
And that's just in that one class. You think about all the different classes, and like Casey was saying, you got some classes where the engines are, you know, all the same now, everything the same. So that really does add to the competition, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be competitive. I wouldn't bet money on anybody at Parker. Even the guy who wins the time trials doesn't necessarily mean he's going to win the race. Mm-hmm. We had a guy who finished Vegas to Reno a couple years ago. First three vehicles in were all happy, thinking they got first, second, and third. And a guy who started 40 minutes behind him won the race because nobody was paying attention to corrected time.
Wow.
And you got to kind of remember that. Parker's on corrected time. Not physically, but corrected time. So it's you got to keep track of it. By the way, we will. This will be televised on NBC Sports, Lucas Great. Productions, and everything will be live time with live streaming out there also. So
amazing.
At the finish line, there will be live times posted at the Mesa as the race is going on. They'll have all the split times up there.
Excellent! Wow.
And our technology, electronics wise. Social media wise is moving way past where Casey's at. I'm a bit antiquated. I still have a flip phone.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mary.
That's funny. Oh, I was going to ask Casey, all of that filming is going to be done through racedesert.com?
Yes, racedesert.com will be doing all of the split times on the race and letting everybody know, and they'll also be doing it all live on racedesert.com.
What is the race like for you when you leave that start? You get that first guy off the start line, usually somewhere around 9, 9.30, something like that in the morning, right? And then after that, where do you disappear to? Where do you go?
I'm doing about 30 different things. I go from there. I don't know if I want to give you my whole layout, but I go
right
from there. I clean the first 3 miles of the race course.
Oh.
Then I go back to the main pit, and I'm usually on radios, and my job in the main pit is to make sure all the pit teams and everybody is back away from the course, making sure that they're doing everything properly in there. So I have a lot of duties before I actually move to the finish line. Then I set the finish line up and get ready for some of the leaders. Remember, some of these classes are two-lap classes, so we may very well have a couple of two-lap finishers before the overall leader gets his three laps in.
Okay.
So from that point till about midnight, I'm at the finish line, and we usually finish closing down the finish line about 1 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
You know, one of the things that people comment on about Best in the Desert races, too, is the safety. You guys have had a very, very good track record. What do you think it is that makes the races safe like they are?
I would say number one is caring. I learned a long time ago when I worked for the people in Italy, don't start the race till you have communications all the way around the course. We spend a lot of money, a lot of energy to make sure we have communications. We have three different radio systems that I can talk to every person on the course through. So number one is our planning of it. Number two, you have to care, and you have to spend a lot of time and go above and beyond. That's what we're doing in the next room. I've got all my medical coordinators and my doctors that we have a full-time doctor with Best in the Desert. They're in the other room there. I stopped the staff meeting to come and make the call, but it's a lot of planning. You know, we plan, we stress, we go above and beyond, and you can't take that lackadaisical attitude and say, it's okay, don't worry about it. We're spending a lot of time building infrastructure in Parker to keep the spectators back. It's a big job, and we're very, very concerned about it. Nobody cares more about safety, believe me, than I do.
Well, I know we have a lot of spectators and potential spectators listening. Is there anything you want to say to them directly, Casey, ahead of this race?
Well, I would say common sense in the world we live in prevails. You have to have common sense. We have built spectator areas, and we have boundaries on those areas. We have barriers up. We have signs up, and everybody has to stay behind those. And then in the world we live in, and I'm sure you fellows and Mary feels the same way, I believe we live in the greatest country in the world. And I respect Parker. I respect our country. I respect the Crit Indians. And you can't throw trash down. Cans, bottles, cups, paper. We have to respect our country and other people's property. And we have to be diligently and pick all that stuff up and take it with you, please. If you're out there and you're spectating, we want you to enjoy the race. You need to stay back away from the race course. These are lethal vehicles moving at 120 miles an hour, and they just can't dodge things. So everybody needs to stay back and go to the spectator areas where they're supposed to be.
Now, I was on BITD.com, which has a fine description of what to expect. And amongst that reading, I found an interesting notice that I'm not sure if this is the first year, but it says an important notice. Drones will not be allowed at any BITD event. If you are a media person and you fly a drone, you will lose your press credentials. If you are a pit crew or spectator and fly a drone, the BLM Rangers will be sent to remove you from the area. Please know drones are very dangerous to the safety of all concerned, people in the air and on the ground. Is there a reason why this became an actual regulation?
An issue?
Did it stem from an incident, or are you making a preemptive strike?
Good point. Yeah, it came from an incident. We have, at Parker this year, there's probably going to be 10 helicopters flying. Those are dangerous enough. And at one of our races here recently, we had a fellow fly a drone within 100 feet of the helicopter. It startled the helicopter. Sometimes things look closer. In his opinion, it was 25 or 30 feet away.
Mm-hmm.
Other people's opinion, it was 100 feet away. But it startled him. And so then I went and pursued, before I made that decision, I pursued. And with FAA, you have to have FAA permission to fly a drone commercially. So if you're a guy out there videoing and you're flying a drone and selling your video, that's illegal. And there's only been given 6 drone permits in the United States, commercial permits for drones. So we just felt, make it safe. Let's stop them before we have an incident and somebody gets hurt.
So it's essentially air traffic. It's an air traffic control problem.
It is that. And then there's also the problem, let's suppose the little boy is flying the drone. They run on batteries. That thing stops in the middle of the course. It goes down and somebody says, hey, let's run and get it. And the next thing you know, we've got somebody hurt or injured because they ran out to get the drone because it ran out of battery and they didn't get it, want to get it squashed.
Yeah.
So it's just, I felt it's something we don't need. Let's just stop it and before somebody does get hurt.
It does make sense. The rule and regulation does make sense. I know it will affect the way that they film, because there's a lot of filmmakers on that race circuit that we know of that we've actually had on the show before, and they use an awful lot of drone
footage. Well, I wonder if eventually what might happen is that somebody could maybe apply with Casey to run one, eventually when Casey feels like running them.
Yeah, the people that were in the helicopter, by the way, were the television people.
Oh, okay.
So that just...
Of all the helicopters to get a drone near, that one.
Yeah,
yeah.
Wow. Well, I was curious about that, because when I read that a few weeks ago, when I saw it, I thought, this is very interesting, because even at the start where Keith and I are doing the broadcast for KLPZ, there's always one right there at the start that starts right about steering wheel level, and then as that green light goes, they lift that out. And I've seen the footage of that. A drone before, and it is spectacular. I mean, it puts you right there where a regular camera would.
You're a fan of that footage.
I am a fan of that footage, but at the same time, I'm not a fan of those drones doing damage to people and causing an incident that could cause this race to be compromised. I'm not a fan of that, so I understand that rule, and I would support that rule.
Yeah, it's just like anything. You hate to go through world. I'm sure you guys feel the same way. You hate another law and another law and another rule. And it usually something when they come about, it's something like this that's happened. And I look at it and you weigh it and you go, I better stop it before we do have an accident.
Right. It's not a very big one in the whole scheme of the race and everything that you go through with the drivers on the night before and all of that. I mean, it's a whole... If no one's ever been to that driver's meeting, it's just a...
I mean, there's so many people in there, too. I mean, they don't even have that many people in the bingo hall for bingo.
And you got special meetings for helicopter pilots and the whole nine yards. I mean, it really is an operation, Casey, and my hat's off, and all of our hats are off to you guys for pulling it off every year. Mary, do you want to talk about the downtown experience real quick, and we'll get Casey back to his meeting?
Yes, I actually just wanted to ask Casey if he could talk about the permit he just got from BLM.
I guess we can announce it. We were going to wait, but we'll announce it. The first time in the history of Bureau of Land Management, we have a 10-year permit for both of the Parker races.
Wow.
10 years.
And no, they've never issued a 10-year permit before.
So what was it before?
For the last couple of years, it's been a 5-year permit, and that permit expired in 2014. So for 2015 and through the next 10 years, we sat down and talked about it, and they decided they would issue it. We talked to them. We didn't think they would do it, and they came back and said yes.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
I would like to add that the Lake Havasu City Field Office, Bureau of Land Management, has been wonderful to Best in the Desert. They have bent over backwards to make sure that we indeed get the Parker 250 and the Parker 425 races. They work hand-in-hand with us. They work very hard, and we have to meet all the stipulations that they've laid down. So we have a good working relationship.
Awesome. Super glad to hear
good
that,
news.
Casey.
Great news.
And the downtown experience the day before, there's all kinds of stuff going on, contingency. That's a great time with the this is the spectator race of all of them, really, isn't it?
It is. When we anticipate somewhere between 25 and 30,000 spectators, between the two bow spectator areas, Shea Road, we have a couple over on Crit Indian Land. Somewhere in the neighborhood, 25 to 30,000 is the estimated amount of people.
Amazing.
Love it.
It is.
I'll be one of them.
Just a couple of years ago, the Bouse Y was closed. And that's so right. A bunch of us in the community got together and we found some K-rails and we hauled them out there, and BLM came out and had a work camp session and they painted them, and we were able to put some posting cable along with the K-rails and reopen the Bouse Y. So I think the Bouse Y, has it been like 3 years reopened now, Casey?
I think about three, and by the way, the town owes Mary a big pat on the back, and hurrah, she's the one that really made all that happen, and went out and got all those K-rails, and then had them all delivered, and a fellow with a forklift to place them. So, Mary, I salute you for that, and all the people in Parker that were involved with that. That was a great, great function
awesome.
You did there.
Well, I will have to say that Steve Draper came up with the K-rails, and I just got them moved. So it was just meant to be.
It was meant to be. Mary, anything else you want to add?
No, I just want to thank Casey and Best in the Desert for coming to our town. And as he always knows, if there's anything you need, just let me know.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate that very much.
Yeah.
You guys are wonderful. And Mary, thank you. Thank you, fellas, for allowing me to be on your show. And
hey, Casey, thank you
everybody.
So much. Great that you were able to come on, and good luck for the race. It's going to be a good year.
Well, thank you, and I'll look forward to seeing you guys when I'm in Parker.
All right. We'll see you next week.
All right, Casey, thanks
you.
So much. Bye.
Bye.
Casey, folks, right there
class
from Best in the Desert. Yeah, really a class act, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. He walks the walk. You know, he doesn't just talk the talk.
There'd be a whole lot of people who would apply for that BLM permit and who would not get it at all, let alone get 10 years out of it.
10 years
is
huge.
Just Casey, you know? He's a guy that knows how to build relationships and work well and be sensible enough to run a race. We've all heard about other races that have not gone so well. Mm-hmm. We have all heard about
exactly.
other races that are not organized quite as well, and you see the consequences. Casey really knows how to run a tight ship, you know?
Yeah. I will tell you that the BLM at the federal level would